This year's fund drive is over, but the link to donate is still live at cgsf.ca/donate. If you missed supporting our campaign in real time, it's not too late. Donate now, and thank you.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We are all here to charge this administration with genocide! Israel and the United States are jointly complicit in the ongoing Nakba in Palestine. Together, they are rendering international law worthless and irrelevant!
A massive crowd rallied in Washington, D.C. Saturday for the largest pro-Palestinian rights march in U.S. history, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as the death toll in Gaza and the West Bank nears 10,000 over the past month. We'll hear voices from the protests, including Palestinian lawyer and activist Noura Erekat and the hip-hop star Macklemore.
We lead with our hearts, we speak the truth, we shut down the propaganda, and we march forward. Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Plus, as Israel rejects growing calls for a ceasefire, we'll look at Secretary of State Tony Blinken's tour of the Middle East, from Tel Aviv to Ramallah, from Jordan to Iraq, and now Turkey. We'll speak with University of Maryland professor Shibli Talhami. We'll also talk to Dr. Alice Rothschild, retired OBGYN, who's long worked in Palestine. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military says its forces have fully encircled Gaza City as it intensifies its bombardment of the besieged Palestinian territory. Israeli leaders say the ground offensive has split the territory in two, a South Gaza and a North Gaza. On Sunday, Gaza was once again plunged into a total communications blackout, the third such outage since October 7th. 18 UN and other prominent aid groups issued a rare joint statement calling for an immediate ceasefire after 30 days of incessant and indiscriminate attacks. Enough is enough, the groups declared. The death toll in Gaza is nearing 10,000. Nearly half the victims are children. The UN says 88 of its staff have been killed, the highest number of UN deaths ever in a single conflict. At least 45 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Al-Maghazi refugee camp Saturday. It's located in the southern area Israel told Palestinians they should seek shelter in to escape bombing up north. Photojournalist Mohammed Al-Alul lost four of his five children and other family members in the attack on Al-Maghazi.
The news began to trickle in slowly, telling me your daughter is wounded, your son is wounded. I got in touch with colleagues at Al-Aqsa Hospital. I found my four children martyred. My only daughter, my oldest son, Ahmed, the kind one. May God have mercy on him. Kanan, may God have mercy on him. Kayas, may God have mercy on him.
Israel continues to strike schools and health facilities in Gaza, including the areas around Al-Quds and Al-Shifa hospitals. Fresh strikes also took aim at the densely populated Jabalia refugee camp Saturday following last week's massacre.
I was standing here when three bombings happened. I carried a body. Another decapitated body was my own hands.
Where should I go? They've hit the shelters. Those who are on the streets in Gaza are hit while walking. Since when has it become normal to strike shelters? This is so unfair. You walk on the street, you're hit. And while you're carrying the body to bury, they strike us. Where is the United Nations in this? Never in any war were shelters hit.
Around 1,100 people have left the Gaza Strip since the Rafah crossing with Egypt was briefly opened. Evacuations have been suspended since Saturday, but Egyptian, U.S. and Qatari officials said they hope they would resume later today. Meanwhile, reports emerged Friday that Israel was not allowing citizens of Brazil and Ireland to leave the war-torn enclave as retaliation for their government's criticism of Israel and calls for a ceasefire. This is an 11-year-old American-Palestinian girl, Farah Saluha, who was forced to leave her father behind in Gaza as she traveled to Egypt with her mother and siblings.
I'm very sad because I love all my friends, especially in school, because I was always happy with them, and I miss being happy instead of just worrying about my safety all the time. The start of the war was very hard because I was sick and we had to sleep. I couldn't sleep in my room. But then they told me to get out of Gaza, and I didn't want to leave Gaza. So I had to go to Rafah and sleep in different places, and we kept on moving, and I didn't want this. There was no electricity and no internet and no water.
Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati said his government will file a complaint with the UN Security Council after an Israeli drone attack Sunday evening killed a grandmother and three children. The strike came as Israeli and Hezbollah forces have been engaged in skirmishes along the border over the past month. Hezbollah fired rockets into northern Israel in response. The group has vowed to retaliate against Israel if it kills civilians in Lebanon. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Ankara for talks with Turkey's foreign minister about Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. Ahead of Blinken's arrival, Turkish police fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse thousands of protesters who'd marched on an airbase housing U.S. troops. On Saturday, Turkey recalled its ambassador to Israel after condemning the, quote, unfolding humanitarian tragedy in Gaza, unquote. On Sunday, Blinken made a surprise trip to Baghdad for talks with Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani. That followed Blinken's unscheduled meeting earlier in the day with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. Blinken rejected Abbas's demand for a ceasefire in Gaza. On Saturday, Blinken joined a summit of Arab leaders in Jordan, all of whom condemned Israel's assault and demanded a ceasefire. Meanwhile, CIA Director William Burns arrived in Israel Sunday for talks with Israeli leaders and intelligence officials, and then will travel through the Middle East. Massive protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza and an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine took place across the globe again over the weekend. Drone footage shows an endless sea of protesters in major cities, including Jakarta, Indonesia, Paris, London, Berlin, Athens. Here in the United States, over 100,000 people took part in protests in the streets of Washington, D.C. Saturday in the largest ever U.S. demonstration for Palestinian rights. Speakers addressed the crowd from a stage in Freedom Plaza, which they dubbed Gaza Plaza, before marching toward the White House. This is Hatem Bazian, a Palestinian professor at UC Berkeley.
Palestine was the last settler colonial project to be commissioned by these Western hypocritical countries. And as we celebrated the release of Nelson Mandela and the end of apartheid, the last settler colony in Africa, we will celebrate the end of settler colonialism in Palestine. Why? Because that's what justice calls. That's what courage calls for. That's what integrity calls for.
Later in the broadcast, we'll hear more voices from the historic pro-Palestinian rights protest in D.C. One day before Saturday's mass protest, 52 activists were arrested on Capitol Hill as they occupied the offices of Democratic senators, demanding the lawmakers back an immediate Gaza ceasefire. The senators included Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Ed Markey. In Rhode Island, the Providence City Council has passed a resolution calling for a ceasefire and for the Biden administration to send humanitarian aid to Gaza. This came just days after City Councilor Miguel Sanchez was fired from his job at the Rhode Island governor's office for speaking out against the Israeli assault in Gaza. Meanwhile, New York Times Magazine's award-winning writer Jasmine Hughes resigned after signing an open letter condemning Israel's genocide in Gaza. The move constituted a violation of newsroom policy. New York Times contributor Jamie Lauren Kalis, who describes himself as a religiously observant Jew, also left the New York Times after signing on to the letter. In California, dozens of protesters demanding a ceasefire in Gaza gathered at the Port of Oakland Friday, blocking the departure of a U.S. military supply vessel. Organizers say the ship was holding weapons bound for Israel. Protesters occupied the berth while others locked themselves to ladders on the side of the ship. After 9 hours of occupation, police moved in to forcefully remove protesters from the vessel, and the ship began to leave the port as people shouted, "Shame on you." Organizers in Oakland said they've coordinated with partners in Tacoma, Washington. The vessel's expected next stop for another peaceful blockade Monday. Meanwhile, during a Palestinian solidarity action in Puerto Rico Saturday, a protester climbed a flagpole in front of the capital in San Juan to remove the U.S. flag and replace it with a Palestinian flag. An Arab Muslim student at Stanford University is calling on people to spread compassion and kindness after he was struck Friday in a hit and run that's being investigated as a hate crime. The driver shouted, "F you people," as he drove away. Abdul Wahab Omira released a statement from his hospital bed saying, quote, "This ordeal has solidified my resolve to advocate for love, understanding and inclusivity," he said. In Nepal, a 5.6 magnitude quake struck the far western Karnali province Friday, killing at least 157 people. It was Nepal's worst earthquake since its 2015 disaster, which killed 9,000 people. Rescue workers had to clear roads blocked by landslides and debris to reach the mountainous villages at the epicenter of the quake. An estimated 5,000 houses were destroyed or damaged. Survivors say they're still waiting for help 3 days after the disaster.
"We have nothing left. Dust from the debris are entering into our noses and mouths. We can't see properly due to the dust. We have dust on our ears. What to do? We are in a very bad situation. The children are complaining that they're hungry. We don't have a place to stay, nor food to eat or clothes to wear. No one is looking after us."
In India, officials have extended elementary school closures in the capital, New Delhi, through the end of the week as New Delhi of 33 million chokes under a gray, thick gray haze of air pollution. The hazardous air conditions are due to crops, stubble, burning in neighboring farm states, a drop in temperatures and winds. Residents are battling a myriad of health problems due to the smog.
"The situation is very bad here. There is a lot of coughing, colds, and burning sensation in the eyes. The kids are also sick. We cannot take the kids out, and we also step out far less than we used to because of this pollution."
And in the Philippines, 57-year-old radio journalist Juan Humalon was shot dead during a live broadcast in his home studio Sunday by an attacker who fled on a motorcycle with an accomplice. Viewers watching the program on Facebook witnessed the brazen murder in real time, though the shooter was not on camera. Police say they're investigating whether the killing was related to Humalon's work as a journalist. He was the 199th media worker to be killed in the Philippines since the dictator Ferdinand Marcos, the father of the current president, was toppled in a popular uprising in 1986. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The heads of 18 United Nations agencies and NGOs have issued a rare joint statement calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, expressing shock and horror at Israel's month-long bombardment. The statement read in part, quote, "We need an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. It's been 30 days. Enough is enough. This must stop now," unquote. But Israel's rejecting all calls for a ceasefire, even a humanitarian pause, as the Palestinian death toll in Gaza and the West Bank nears 10,000 over this past month. U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken's continuing a trip throughout the Middle East. Blinken's in Turkey today after stops in Tel Aviv, Ramallah, Jordan, and Iraq. This comes as fears grow of a broader regional war. On Sunday, an Israeli strike on a car in southern Lebanon killed three children and their grandmother. The strike came 2 days after Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah gave a major address. We begin today's show looking at diplomatic efforts to halt Israel's bombardment, which began October 7th after Hamas launched a surprise attack that Israel says killed over 1,400 people. Israel says about 240 hostages were taken during the attack. We're joined by Shibli Telhami, professor of peace and development at the University of Maryland, also a senior fellow at the Center for Middle East Policy. He's co-editor of the book, The One State Reality, What is Israel-Palestine? Professor Telhami, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you start off by talking about this horrifying landmark moment? Nearly 10,000 Palestinians have been killed, mass protests around the world, Secretary of State Blinken going to Tel Aviv, then surprising people by going to Ramallah, went to Jordan, met with Arab leaders, then on to Iraq. The significance of that now in Turkey. What you feel needs to happen now?
Well, first of all, in terms of this moment, which you asked about, obviously, anyone with a heart, it doesn't matter whether you are Jewish or Arab or Christian or whatever, the scale of horror is just unbearable. And we haven't seen that in certainly years, but perhaps decades in the Israeli-Palestinian arena. But I think it's even bigger than that. It's beyond the humanitarian heartache that we all witness every day, and we have witnessed also in the attack on Israel. I think it is, you know, those people who think this is just another cycle of violence are really not captured in the moment. This is a paradigm-changing moment. This is a moment that's likely to really shift the way we think about the conflict. It is likely to shift the way people in the region think about the United States because of its role. And I think, therefore, even people who are thinking about, let's think about the morning after, are not coming to grips with what a morning after might look like, if there is a morning after. So I think it's a moment that is bigger than most of us realize, because those moments in history usually are evaluated after the fact, not while you're going through it. We know it's horrendous, but we're not grasping the implications.
Let's talk about President Biden right now. Polls show that before all of this took place, I mean, when he was elected, he had something like 59% of the Arab American vote. We're now talking about something like 17%. And we're talking about key states like Michigan, Dearborn, for example. Can you talk about the significance of this nationally and then globally where he stands in the Arab world?
Yeah, I think nationally, obviously, we already see, you know, implications of this. We see it in various polling that has been taken. His popularity has dropped among Democrats, coincidentally around the same time that this war started and is going on. And we don't know that that's directly related to it, but it perhaps it is. But I have conducted a poll through our University of Maryland critical issues poll 2 weeks after the war. And there was a bump in the sympathy for Israel. But when it comes to the Biden administration's evaluation, more people said he was too pro-Israel than said he is too pro-Palestinian. And obviously, in terms of the implications for voting, we asked, are you more likely to vote for President Biden because of his stance on the Israeli-Palestinian issue? We have far more people saying they're less likely to vote for him than more likely to vote for him. So it has implications way beyond Arab and Muslim Americans, because our poll cannot possibly capture Arab and Muslim Americans in the sample. But we do know that in the sample, in based on you know, reporting and other polls that have been done, Arab and Muslim Americans are extremely frustrated. I know definitely that some of the Arab American leaders have conveyed to the Secretary of State directly that the president is likely to lose Michigan because of his stance. So I think the president My own view is this war is going to hurt him, but globally it's also going to hurt him a lot because I think people understood his support for Israel after the horrific Hamas attack. What they can't understand is his inability to condemn the actions that have resulted in such mass destruction and killing in Gaza, and his seeming complicity in that. And that's really something that goes against the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We know that he tried to defend the notion of a liberal international order, and certainly a rules-based international order, and opposed in principle targeting civilians or recklessly endangering them and war crimes. And what we see, he's not able to do that with regard to Gaza. I think this is going to undermine his standing globally, not just in the Middle East, not just in the Global South, but beyond.
You also said in a recent interview there's a level of shock you haven't seen, even during the Iraq war, that you'd bet Biden today might even supersede Benjamin Netanyahu as the most disliked leader in the Arab world, Professor Talhami.
Yes, and as you know, I took a position against the Iraq war in 2002 when people were talking about it to the point that I helped organize an ad for international relations scholar in the New York Times, September 2002, saying the Iraq war is not in America's national interest. It was hard for us to break through an anti-war message through the regular media. And at that time, I also conducted a poll in the Arab world that showed that George W. Bush had become even less popular in the Arab world than then hardline Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. And I bet the same is taking place at the moment. This is a moment, as I said, it's a paradigm shifting moment. And I think that it's going to be very hard for Biden to recover from it. It's very hard for people to listen to him when he is speaking about a promise of peace or a promise of two states. They had not trusted him before this in the Arab world, the public opinion I'm talking about. And I think after this stance, it's going to be impossible.
Shibley Talhami, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Professor of Peace and Development at the University of Maryland, also Senior Fellow at the Center for Middle East Policy, co-editor of the book, The One State Reality, What is Israel-Palestine? Coming up, a massive crowd rallies in Washington, D.C. for the largest pro-Palestinian march in U.S. history, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Stay with us. Window by Sumaya Khan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the health ministry in Gaza says, the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza for the last month since October 7th, when Hamas attack, has reached nearly 10,000 Palestinians. People took to the streets around the world this weekend to call for a ceasefire. They marched in Paris, in London, in Jakarta, Indonesia, in Milan, Italy, in Dakar, Senegal, in Athens, Greece, in San Francisco, in Turkey, and more. On Saturday in Washington, D.C., tens of thousands, perhaps 100,000, organizers say as many as 300,000 people march from Freedom Plaza, which they dubbed Gaza Plaza, to the White House in the largest pro-Palestinian demonstration in U.S. history. Democracy Now! Was there. Democracy Now! Producers Messiah Rhodes and Maria Terracena spoke with some of the protesters.
Free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Malkawi, I'm here.
here to support stopping the war in Gaza now.
How far did you travel to get here, and what would you say to Joe Biden who's here right now?
I traveled 9 hours from Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. Joe Biden, stop. Please stop the war. No more war.
My name is Omar Al-Qadi. We traveled from Charlotte, North Carolina. It's absolutely unbelievable what's going on in Palestine, Ireland. How many more children need to die?
How does it feel to see all the support here right now?
Alhamdulillah. Well, alhamdulillah. It's very, very nice. We have a lot of people here today. There's over maybe 100,000 people here in support of Palestine. And that shows that the crimes of Israel are coming out, right? They're losing the media war at the end of the day. A lot of people are being complacent with what's going on in Israel, and they're on the wrong side of history, unfortunately.
My name is Sara. I'm an Egyptian-American, and I'm inspired to be here to stand for what is right. And what is right is to stop the genocide and to stop the ethnic cleansing.
And who are you here with?
I'm here with my family, my mother.
I feel terrible. I can't sleep during the night. I can't imagine what's going on. He killed kids, infant, woman. That's no fair. No fair for anybody, any human being.
What is your message to mothers in Gaza?
I support her all the way. I wish with her right now. I feel sorry for her, but I can't do anything just to come here to support her.
Nasser Abu Sita, I'm from Gaza, Palestine, and I am here to urge everybody who is making decisions in this government to stop killing children, stop destroying the city. That's not how wars are fought. This is not how you resolve the problems. You're just making it worse.
You're from Gaza. Do you have family there? Are you in touch with anyone there right now?
I do. We are in touch on and off as situations allow.
How are they? What are they describing to you? And what does it feel like to be here as this is happening?
They have been through so many wars, and this is the most horrifying experience they ever had. They are just day and night bombardment behind them, above them, around them, and they are lucky to be alive. That's how they look at it.
Where in Gaza is your family?
Well, it depends what day you are asking. They moved 4 times so far, from one place to the other.
My name is Jeff Walker. I think it's important for us to be here today because we see oppression happening all over the place, you know, and I think, like, if we allow oppression to continue to happen without saying nothing, then it's going to continue to exacerbate.
And why is it important to bring your kids here today? Why do you want them to be here today?
I always tell them to be on the right side of history, you know, and absolutely, and because the things that's happening in Palestine are the things that we've also been subjected to, you know, in our time in America here as well. And so I tell my kids to understand what's going on in this country and let them know that, give them a quote that Malcolm X said, you know, the media will have you praising the oppressor and shaming the oppressed. And so I just want my kids to be mindful of, you know, how Palestinians stood up for us and spoke about Black Lives Matter, that we also got to speak up for them as well.
What's your name? Where are you from? And what inspired you to be here with your children, with your family?
I'm Rajab. My name is Rajab Diaz. I'm Palestinian. This is Suhaila. She's just turned 1. And we just had a beautiful birthday party for her. Right after everything happened, I was going to cancel because of what's happening in Gaza. But then I looked at the children there and I said, for children's sake, I'm going to have something for her and other children to enjoy. Because what crime do they have? They don't know what's happening. And I'm here with my Palestinian children to give a voice for the Palestinians that are there back home that have no voice and are being killed by this brutal occupation and genocide that the U.S., we live here, and our tax dollars are supporting this. And this is a big problem, a big issue, and we want this to end as soon as possible. We don't want no money for Israel. They're committing war crime after war crime, and nothing is being done. It's ridiculous. No other place in the world gets this impunity. No other place.
What's your message to mothers in Gaza that have lost their children and have lost sometimes multiple of their family members?
It's absolutely horrific. You know, me and my mom, we watch these videos and we just cry and cry and cry. But we're going to tell them, be strong and keep moving forward, because we're not going to stop fighting for you.
They kill that kids. They don't have guns. They don't know
they kill the babies? Give me your answer, please. Please.
They give him time to kill. This is our president. He is give more time, long time, to kill more.
I live in a suburb of Philadelphia. So we drove down. These are my kids and my nieces and nephews.